Hello and welcome to episode 55 of Popcorn Optional, a weekly movie podcast where we talk all things movies, and this week we are here to review the reboot, remake, Lego sequel, I don't know what to call it, Ocean's 8. We also have some news and trailers to get to. We're going to talk Batman, who's the best Batman, who should play the next Batman. Don't know why I said Batman that way, but hey, Batman. It's like a Fargo Batman. And as always, we'll end with our content of the week. My name is Cameron Salina. I'm joined by my co-hosts Jake Brown and Trevor Allison.
Hello.
I think we should rename our podcast Popcorn Optional 2 because this is our first of like five sequels in a row that we're reviewing.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say we should rename it Cameron Does Weird Voices.
Yeah. Well, okay. We can do that if you guys want.
I like that one. That was pretty good.
Okay. I'll try and throw some more in as we go. It's very selective on which ones. They're either good or they're very bad. So if we get into the Batman and I start doing a Christian Bale accent, I think we'll be fine. We just got to make it to that point.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good.
So let's go ahead and get into trailers. And for the second week in a row, we have way too many trailers. I mean, it's just insane that why are studios just mad dropping trailers like crazy? Like in the past week, there's been 14 or 15 serious trailers that have been released, which is, okay, fine. Way to overload us. And none of you guys really made a huge impact, other than one of you. So let's go ahead and get to these trailers. The first one being Bad Times at the El Royale, which is the new film from Drew Goddard, who's last film that he directed and wrote was Cabin in the Woods, the amazingly, amazingly good film from 2012 that's a horror sci-fi blend type thing. What did you guys think of this trailer? The cast is insane. The premise is weird and out there. It looks like a Drew Goddard film.
Yeah, Cabin in the Woods is like one of my favorite movies ever, just how much it subverts the genre of horror and does this like bait and switch in a way. No spoilers, but if you haven't seen Cabin in the Woods, you have to see it. It's fantastic. And I kind of had that same vibe when I watched this. I was just like, I don't really know what this is, but I'm really digging the actors and the performances and the cinematography and just like the overall style. And like this premise is super weird, but I'm totally into it. So yeah, this trailer came out of nowhere for me, but I'm like really excited to see this movie now.
This looks like the closest thing to I've ever seen of a movie version of the song Hotel California, which is enough for me. I've been wanting someone to try to adapt that into a movie for a long time, and this might get there.
Yeah, well, when you've got Chris Hemsworth playing a shirtless cult leader, I mean, that screams Hotel California to me.
And Jeff Bridges is a fake priest? Okay, cool.
Jeff Bridges, Dakota Johnson, John Hamm, Nick Offerman, supposedly Russell Crowe is also in this in some fashion. So
Yeah, definitely not one of those movies that we complain about where you see the trailer and know the whole thing.
Right.
Yeah,
I know
not
absolutely
at all.
Not absolutely nothing, but very, very little. So a lot to look forward to with this one coming out on October 5th. Next up is How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, the third and final film in the How to Train Your Dragon trilogy. And I don't know about you guys. This is the first two of these are two of my all time favorite animated movies.
Agreed.
And if this lands the dismount, I will throw out there that I think that this trilogy rivals Toy Story.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, man. These movies like really caught me off guard. The first one, I was like, DreamWorks. I mean, they had Shrek 1, but severely downhill since then. And I had low expectations, but it blew me away. The sequel was just as good as the first one. These movies are fantastic, and this, I was like tearing up in this trailer. Like, it's not even that good of a trailer. It's just like the emotions and the memories that this trilogy, has so far. I mean, I can't wait. I'm super sad. Right. Like the series will be over, but I'm super excited to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks like it might be pretty heavy at times, which is interesting. I like my heavy animated films. Bring some realness to the kids these days, you know. But yeah, I'm excited for this, definitely.
Yeah, this is one of those series that's incredibly emotional. If you've always written this series off because it's animated, go check it out. It's well worth your time. It's enjoyable. It has very serious moments. There's fun, like, world building, and it's one of those series where the voice cast is just absolutely perfect. There's also like a bunch of shots in this trailer that are kind of like, don't give anything away, but at the same time, make me want to know so much. Like, why is Hiccup have a beard?
Yeah, in one random shot.
Right, and then the rest of the movie, just no beard whatsoever. And then there's just so many like great parts to this trailer that hopefully this one is as good as it looks and lives up to the hype and is a worthy finale for this trilogy. That'll come out March 1st of 2019. So we got a while to that one. Next up is A Star Is Born, the directorial debut for Bradley Cooper, where he also stars as a musician.
Guys, I like knew this was happening and I didn't want to like it, but dang if this trailer didn't suck me in.
Oh yeah.
I mean, everyone seems so earnest in it and the music is like actually good, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Which these kind of movies don't usually have actual good music.
Well, these kind of movies Bradley don't also Cooper, normally have talented musicians like Lady Gaga in them.
Well, that's true. I mean, yeah, there's a little bit when they, you know, remind you that Lady Gaga is in this, with her vocals. But yeah, I think this might be good. I don't know if it's going to be good. It's the third time they've remade this movie. Doing a country music kind of thing is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
This almost feels like a prequel to Crazy Heart in some ways.
yeah.
But yeah, I'm actually was not excited for this movie, and now I'm pretty intrigued by it after seeing the trailer.
Yeah, I agree with Trevor. I'm very intrigued by this. I love these kind of films. These just like small, intimate stories set in a interesting like world, and by that I mean just country music stardom. That's an interesting world, obviously. I'm a little concerned that Bradley Cooper is the star of his directorial debut. I feel like that adds a lot of difficulty to something that's already very difficult, but Bradley Right. Cooper is one of the best actors of his generation. So, you know, if anybody can do it, I feel like he might be able to pull it off. This trailer implies that he can, and I'm really excited about it.
Right. You know, there's one part in this trailer that gives me pause, and it's a very small thing, but it's when non-Southern actors try to do Southern accents.
Yeah.
Sometimes they put it on a little bit too hard.
Yeah.
And there's a part where he's like, "Hey," and she turns around and is like, "I just wanted to see you one last time." It's like, it's a little thick.
Little heavy, buddy.
It was very jarring to hear him talk like that. It really threw me off.
Right. There's a couple moments in the trailer where he really nails the accent, and there's a couple moments where he goes like full Jeff Bridges Southern hell or high water, which only Jeff Bridges can pull off. But any film that brings Dave Chappelle to the big screen, I'm going to be a big fan of. So the script must be decent if it got Chappelle to be in it. That or Bradley Cooper just is great friends with him and offered him a ton of money.
He seems very charismatic.
Chappelle or Cooper?
No, Bradley Cooper.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's A Star Is Born. That gets a nice little Oscar release there on October 5th going up against Bad Times at the El Royale, which we've already talked about. Next up is the film that I may now be most excited about the rest of the year. I will compare every trailer to this trailer. And that is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, the new animated film that has nothing to do with the Tom Holland Marvel Spider-Man films. And the animation in this is just flat out incredible.
It's like nothing I've ever seen before.
Yeah.
An animated film.
If anything, I'm excited just to like visually see this. The story could be terrible. It could be terribly, but I doubt it is because the people involved and like the humor, and it looks fantastic. as a film, but the visual style in this is incredible.
Right. And yeah.
I love the casting of Jake Johnson as an adult Peter Parker.
So good.
Yeah, that's great.
And Shameik Moore, for those of you guys that saw, I think it was called Dope. Dope from 2015. He's a super talented actor playing Miles Morales. And then, of course, it's written by Phil Miller, or Phil Lord, not Phil Miller. That's Last Man on Earth. written by Phil Lord and produced by Lord and Miller.
Which they did work on that show, so.
Right.
It's a mess there. It's a confusing name mess.
Yes.
Yeah. There's moments in this trailer, too, that are just like the visual of him pushing off of the glass. It's shattering, and then him like falling, but it looks like he's like soaring upwards towards the skyline.
Mm-hmm.
That shot was just and then like the free fall of like this uncontrolled free fall. There's little like things that they're doing that I feel like they wouldn't be able to get away with in a live action movie that they're just fully going for, and it's so much fun. Not to mention the little bit with his dad, the "I love you, dad" part is was a pretty funny little bit.
That's so good.
Yeah. So Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse comes out December 14th. And looking forward to that one. The last trailer we're going to be talking about is the next film from Damien Chazelle. Arguably first time, as soon as he can be nominated for honorable mention, probably will be nominated if this movie's as good as this trailer is. And he's able to follow up Whiplash and La La Land with something just as good. But it's the story of Neil Armstrong, and Jake, you can talk about this from a cinematography angle. When I was watching this, it felt at times like I was watching an actual like home video from the 60s.
So I did some research on this after watching the trailer because I had that same thought of just like how real this looked. And I credit a lot of that to Chazelle and Gosling's performance just in the trailer alone. I mean, this feels like Oscar caliber work from a lot of people involved, but apparently the camera and lighting team were like super, super minimal. I think the entire camera department was only like four people maybe. And they were doing everything or as much as possible with practical lighting, which is really, really interesting. I'm excited to see it. It looks great, which is cool. Like, it looks really good. But it looks very documentary.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that Chazelle probably, with his experience on Whiplash, really understands how to do things in a minimalistic way. Cause mm-hmm. that was a pretty bare bones film, as far as cast, crew, everything. But yeah, this looks, I know I'm the guy who always says like I don't really care about these kind of movies. I'd rather watch a documentary. This looks really good. It's a very different kind of thing for Gosling, at least to me, than what he normally does. And so I'm very intrigued by that.
Super.
Do you think
intrigued.
Gosling is going on his Leonardo DiCaprio tour and going for that Oscar?
Maybe so. If there is an easy way to get an Oscar, it's to do a perfect impression in a biopic.
The guy who wrote First Man, Josh Singer, the last two films that he did, he wrote Spotlight, and then he wrote The Post. So I still have yet to see The Post, but Spotlight is an incredible script. This is one that kind of seems like it's firing on all cylinders, and especially, you know, you look at the cast, Claire Foy from Crown, Corey Stoll, Kyle Chandler, Jason Clark, Shea Whigham, Pablo Schreiber. I mean, there's a ton of really great actors. So this could be a home run. We've seen one trailer, but yeah, all things point to this being a pretty great little hit. It'll come out October 12th of this year. So October is looking to be a pretty heavy month for us. Which of these trailers got you most interested in the movie?
First Man. I mean, I'm with Trevor of like biopics for me are super hit or miss. Like for some reason I had no interest in the Winston Churchill, Gary Oldman film that came out this year. But this is just the people involved and the quality of the trailer. This is like top of my most anticipated films of the year.
For me, it's A Star Is Born, just for how surprising the trailer was and how it was. It made me interested in something I was not interested in whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm with... as far as which of the trailers I liked the best, it would probably be Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, but you could have showed me no trailer for that movie and I would have been interested. I think the trailer that most changed my mind on the movie was A Star Is Born. I think all these other movies, if you just look at the pieces, you're kind of like... Drew Goddard, Damien Chazelle, Ryan Gosling, like you're looking at the pieces and you're like, yeah, this is going to be great. But A Star Is Born is the one that was probably the most down on my list and then moved the highest after the trailer. I'm not saying that it was my favorite, but definitely moved up on my list. So news came out today that Ben Affleck, supposedly this is still a rumor, but I feel like we talk about this every 5 minutes that Ben Affleck is done playing Batman. A new rumor comes out every other day of, you know, they're done. They're going to get this actor to replace him. And, you know, I think that he probably signed on for something very different than what he's ended up getting. And so, you know, we want to take a second to look back at all the Batsy boys. There we go.
That's it.
And we want to kind of give you guys our ranking of what we think is the best Batman. There's been a bunch of people to play him over the year. You know, you started with, there's people that we've never seen back in like the 30s and 40s that we're just not going to get into. You know, the first notable person would be Adam West. And then, you know, moving on from there, you get Michael Keaton, you get Val Kilmer, Clooney, Christian Bale, Ben Affleck. And then you also have, you know, voice roles like Kevin Conroy, who is probably the most iconic voice role for the Batman character. And then, you know, you also have Will Arnett, who has voiced Batman in the Lego movie and then got his own movie in the Lego Batman movie. So starting at 8, let's kind of break down who each of our people is. So my number 8. Is George Clooney, who I'd argue is the best actor on this list, but the worst Batman. And we should say we are ranking them as both Batman and Bruce Willis. Who is the best overall at playing both roles?
Bruce Willis.
No, Bruce Willis. I spoke correct. I know what I'm saying.
I think, for the record,
well, hold on.
I
need to change my rankings.
I think that Michael Keaton would be the best Bruce Willis.
Okay.
Out of all of these options.
Yeah. I disagree with your point that George Clooney might be the best actor on this list, which we'll get into later, but I'm with you that George Clooney is also my number 8.
Yeah, George Clooney is also my number 8. I think that Clooney is great in some things and incredibly talented, and he's not bad as Bruce Wayne, but he's just abysmal as Batman.
Well, okay, it's more the film is terrible. Like they didn't.
That's true.
They got George Clooney and they did everything they could to set him up for failure. Like it was the nipples, the Batman Visa card. Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, there was just too much ridiculousness.
The production design on that thing. The production design is offensive. Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah.
So on the count of 3, can we all say our number 7? So ready? 1, 2, 3, Val Kilmer.
Adam West.
Ben Affleck.
What?
What? Oh my gosh.
All right, Trevor,
I can't believe
go ahead.
You disgrace Adam West in that way.
Who said Adam West? Jake, did you say Adam West?
Jake said Adam West.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Well, I'll explain that in a little bit.
So Ben Affleck is, I mean, I think everyone above this is fine at a base. I mean, it's obvious that we all picked Clooney as the worst because clearly, but Affleck just, I know that he's playing an older Batman who's kind of beaten down, but it's just like, this hollow, soulless figure that is sort of brought a little bit to life by Wonder Woman, I guess, but it just, there's nothing about it. It doesn't seem real to me. It seems like it's Ben Affleck playing Batman instead of Batman.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't have as many problems with Ben Affleck. My thing was more Val Kilmer is just utterly forgettable in this role, and he's not a good Bruce Wayne. He's not a good Batman. He's just not, he doesn't do anything with the character. And my, like, I'll go ahead and show my cards a little bit. Ben Affleck's my number six. And I think that he at least, like, makes it his own somewhat. Like, he kind of gives his own take on it to where Val Kilmer is just like, hey, I'm Val Kilmer. I'm Batman. Want to see me play volleyball?
Yeah. You can ride my tail anytime.
Hey, so, Val Kilmer's going to be in Top Gun too.
I know. Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
Oh, no, no.
So I want to hear about Adam West. I want to hear about Adam West.
Okay. Here's the thing is I just don't have much experience with the classic Batman series. I like respect Adam West for what he did to bring the character back into pop culture. And I understand that he is considered Batman by a lot of people. I like every kid, especially like every little boy of our generation had like their superhero growing up. Mine was Batman. And a lot of that had to do with the animated series, and I loved like how dark and gritty it was. And then I really liked the Val Kilmer Batman. Christian Bale's performance as Batman is great. The Dark Knight's my favorite movie of all time. And so then to like watch the campy like bam pow holy something something Batman, I just can't holy do it. And so that's why it's low on my list. It's not because I think Adam West is bad. It's because right. I think just that interpretation of the character does not speak to me, but I will say it will never be worse than George Clooney. So
there we go. Okay. So then Jake, who's your number six?
My number six is Val Kilmer.
Okay. So there we go.
Also my number six, Val Kilmer.
And I said, my number six is Ben Affleck. Number five on my list is Will Arnett. I think that he does. And that's not because he does anything wrong in the role. It's just that the top four just have a longer legacy. Will Arnett does a great job. Yeah.
The dividing line between Arnett and Adam West for me is they're both doing a parody of the character.
Right.
And I think that Adam West just completely sold out for it.
Right.
Like The Batman show of the 60s is an intentional parody to separate itself from the comic book while still living inside a comic book universe. Mm-hmm. And Adam West was just completely committed, 100%. And that's why he's impressive for me.
So, Trevor, is your number five Will Arnett as well?
Yes, yes.
Mine is actually Ben Affleck. And I like what Ben Affleck is doing as Batman and Bruce Wayne. I think, except for Gal Gadot, he's by far the best part of the DC extended universe. And I feel for him that he has been, I think like Cameron, you said, he's kind of been given something that was maybe one expectation is now something else.
Right.
But I have no problems with what he's doing in this universe. I think it's just a terrible universe for a really overqualified actor and director to be in. What he's doing with what he's given is really, really impressive. So,
right.
And I like the version of like an older, almost not like washed up, but just like beat up, tired, run down Batman / Bruce Wayne. Like I love that idea.
Yeah. It's a very Frank Miller Batman.
Yeah, and he does a great job.
But I think, just like a quick aside, I think that he's helped by how great Jeremy Irons is as Alfred. I think that that's one of the better performances in this universe as well.
Yeah.
It's kind of a different Alfred than we're used to seeing, but I think it's good and interesting.
Yeah, that's true.
I would say that like in that series, Gal Gadot is just, you know, she's polishing off like a gold statue. Like, she's just killing this role that's well written. Like, there's so many things that go well for that character. Like, between Patty Jenkins, the writing, the action, like, that character is, she's working with a lot of really good things. And Gal Gadot does a great job at it. But Ben Affleck in that series is like, he's literally polishing a turd. And at the end of the day, it may be shiny, but it's still poop. And that's kind of where I land on Ben Affleck in that role. That being said, I mean, like we've said, love all of his directorial movies other than Live by Night. That's just a weird one. But yeah, so getting back into it, Adam West is my number four. He's a classic, just kind of, I think it's one of those things you just have to respect what he's done. But I do understand if you're getting into Adam West after post a bunch of other Batman things, it's going to just come off as like disingenuous and very campy 60s.
It's so campy.
Yeah, so I get that. What are your guys' number fours?
I would encourage, I had Adam West at four, and I kind of did my piece on him, but I would encourage you guys, after he died last year, year before, people kind of published some interviews with his thoughts on playing Batman, and I would encourage you guys to check that out, because that really, his kind of philosophy for the show and the character really kind of colored my impression of him in the role.
Mm. Yeah.
Cool. My number four is Will Arnett. I think that, like, besides another voice actor who's played Batman that we will talk about in a little bit, Will Arnett is just, like, does such a good job in playing that, like, very meta, self-aware, goofy version of Batman that the Lego movie needed. And he does it so well, and his voice is so great as Batman. And I love how different of a take it is on a character that we all know and love so well without falling into that campy world. It still feels like Batman, as if like Batman was playing a very self-aware version of himself. So I really loved his performance in both the Lego movie and the Lego Batman movie, like super underrated Lego Batman movie.
Yeah, that's a fun movie.
So interesting, but we all have the same three people in our top three. So starting at number three, my number three is Kevin Conroy. And my reasoning for putting him here is a little bit unfair to him, but part of it has to do with the fact that it is a voice role. And so him having to, I grew up with, you know, this animated Batman. I love this character. And I think Kevin Conroy really brings the Batman Bruce Wayne personalities to life. But there's something about the way that the two people that I have at one and two play the character in a physical on-screen sense that puts them ahead of Conroy for me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I could basically echo all of that. I've been rewatching Batman the Animated Series as I feed the baby, and it's still fantastic, still holds up, and Conroy is just great. The way that there truly is a dichotomy between the characters, but not complete. There's still some crossover, some carryover. I think he does a great job.
So is that your number three as well, Trevor?
Yes, it is. Sorry.
My number three is Keaton, which, ooh. Yeah, I didn't watch Keaton's version of Batman until a couple of years ago. I wasn't allowed to watch it when I was a kid. It was too scary. But
it is kind of scary.
It is kind of scary. But it's fantastic, and it kind of defined Batman for generations to come. Michael Keaton is fantastic in both roles, Batman and Bruce Wayne. And there's not much more to say except for it's Michael Keaton playing Batman/Bruce Wayne. Like, why the hell would you not want to see that? And of course, it's amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So my number two is Christian Bale. And let me say my piece really quick.
Okay.
Christian Bale to me does great in Batman. Does okay in Dark Knight. He's lucky that he has Heath Ledger to bounce off of, and you know Heath Ledger pulls him up. And then the third one just completely phones it in and is. I've voiced my distaste. I think we did a whole episode on the Batman trilogy. I've voiced my distaste multiple times for the third film, The Dark Knight Rises. The whole Batman voice thing kills me at times. But I still think he does a very good job. I think that he nails the physicality of Batman.
Yeah, I have Keaton at number two. I think Keaton does by far the best job of any of these actors of carrying the weight of Batman. And you see that in his performance of balancing the double life of just kind of the psychological toll that it takes. It's very close to me for Bale, but Bale does edge him out.
Jake, I'm guessing that Bale's your number one as well.
No.
Oh,
Christian Bale's my number two.
Interesting.
Yeah. Christian Bale I think is a incredible Batman and a fine Bruce Wayne. I think that, I mean, The Dark Knight's my favorite film of all time. Batman Begins is fantastic. I think Christian Bale, like you said, kind of Cameron, Christian Bale is really good as Batman because those movies are really good and have incredibly talented people and really good scripts like surrounding him. And that's what makes them so good. And they were also so surprising. It was just like, whoa, what? Hold on. A superhero movie can be this? What is happening? Like, it was so believable. It was so real and it was so good. And so, yeah, Christian Bale is my number two. And I guess I'll go to my number one, which is Kevin Conroy. And when I think of Batman, it's Kevin Conroy. It's that voice. It's like in my subconscious almost. Like if I'm reading a Batman comic or graphic novel, I'm reading everything in the voice of Kevin Conroy in my head. And while I think I somewhat agree with you, Cameron, in the fact that all of these other people are doing physical performances, I think the fact that Kevin Conroy is able to bring that much of the character to life through just his voice is even more impressive. Also, the interplay between him and Mark Hamill's Joker is, I think, some of the most iconic animation, most iconic superhero moments in the history of cinema, the history of comic books. Kevin Conroy's Batman, in my opinion, he's been it in multiple series, multiple films, multiple video games. And yeah, that's what I grew up as Batman, and it defined that character for me. So he's my number one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to disagree with that.
I mean, that's the flip side of it all of, you know, he's only doing his voice. He's not doing anything physical with it. So yeah, that's a really good point.
So I had Christian Bale as my number one. I will say, to kind of go off what you said earlier, Cam, I think that Christian Bale is definitely the most talented actor in this list, as far as complete body of work and what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I like Christian Bale, and I guess this is maybe just interpreting what you were saying in a different way, Jake. But for me, he feels like he's acting while he's being Bruce Wayne, and it feels like Batman is who he is.
Yeah.
Which kind of gets to the heart of the character, and a lot of the storylines and issues that the character goes through in the comics. So I don't know if Bale intended to play it that way or if it's just him not being very good and me interpreting that way, but that's what puts him ahead for me.
Have you seen the comic book of when Superman, Batman, and Green Lantern all meet Wonder Woman for the first time, and she ropes them with the lasso of truth and asks who they are?
No, I haven't.
So Superman responds like Kal-El, Clark Kent, or whatever. Green Lantern responds with Hal Jordan, and Batman responds Batman.
That's perfect. Oh my goodness, yep. That's awesome. Yeah, so then my number one would be Michael Keaton. I think he does the best job at playing both. While Bale may be a better, like, at the physicality of the role of Batman, I think Keaton plays, like, the detective Batman pretty great, and I think that he also plays Bruce Wayne and that tormented side better than anybody. So, real quick, now
interesting,
that
we all three had a different number one.
Yeah.
We all three had a different number one, and we all had different top threes. With wow. The same people. So, which I think goes to show more than anything that they've nailed it a couple of times with this character, and that, you know, somebody else deserves a chance to be in that ring, and with somebody as talented as Matt Reeves directing a film, I'm curious to see who they get. So if we're dream casting here, who's your top person to play Batman and Bruce Wayne now that Ben Affleck is out?
I have a few options.
Okay. Hit me.
I would love to have a non-white Batman would be really interesting for a lot of reasons. So I think Michael B. Jordan should play Batman, because why the hell not?
Whoa. Man. Yeah. That could be interesting.
I see, when you said that, I was thinking Idris Elba.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, I'm still on the Idris Elba as James Bond bandwagon.
That's I just don't think it's going to be. I would be so pumped for that.
I know. It's not going
to
happen.
Of course,
but,
Daniel Craig
I wish it would.
Is going to make $60 million just to play the role again, and we're all going to hate it. Ridiculous. He's all going to talk about how much he hates it, and then we're just going to roll our eyes and then just wait another 5 years for another Bond film with somebody new, hopefully. Goodness.
Yeah. So for me, I think if it's a straight swap, like if they're just doing like a replace the actor, don't replace the character situation, I think John Hamm is a great option.
Yeah, that was
yes,
my pick.
I agree.
I would love to see John Hamm in this role.
So you're saying if we keep like within same place within the DC universe,
yeah,
same like age, that
yeah,
kind of thing.
Like literally just Ben same Affleck kind of isn't in it anymore. Same character.
Yeah.
No one acknowledges that it's not Ben Affleck. I think John Hamm would be awesome. I think he would be the best Bruce Wayne ever based on
yeah,
his performance of Don Draper.
That's right. Bruce Wayne and Don Draper are not that
yeah they're basically the same person yeah.
No, that's
and
great.
Then I have a few like wild card options that I'll throw out there really quick. One is obviously Joseph Gordon-Levitt because of certain things.
Keep it rolling.
Which would be
if we get Nolan back, I would love that, but there's no chance on this earth that Nolan does
I know
another Batman
but
movie.
What if they pull like and then the DCEU is like, they're kind of connected now, guy. Like, I think people would be pissed.
Oh, my gosh.
And then another one is Oscar Isaac. Could be interesting.
Ooh.
Okay.
If we're going for, like, a younger...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Armie
Hammer. Although, I guess he's probably similar. Armie Hammer was supposed to play Batman in George Miller's Justice League movie.
I think Armie Hammer is one of those people that's like super talented and like very underappreciated and underused in Hollywood.
Listen, yeah. I've only seen him in The Social Network.
Oh, he's good.
So I've heard. Yeah.
Yeah. Another option, Aaron Johnson.
Okay.
Who's Aaron Johnson?
He plays Quicksilver. He was in Kick-Ass.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's one of those guys that's like super hit or miss, and he could maybe pull this off. And then three that will surprise you. One, John Krasinski. You know,
I would rather
maybe.
See Krasinski
see how he
as
is at Jack
as,
Ryan.
Yeah,
I'd rather see him as Reed Richards if we're gonna get a Fantastic Four movie.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
And then Emily Blunt as the Invisible.
Oh, don't
woman.
Tease me with that. Don't even.
Oh,
start.
And then
goodness.
Also. Bring back Michael B. Jordan as George.
Same character in a reboot.
wait. Michael B. Jordan is every character in the Fantastic Four.
Yes.
There we go. Sorry.
That's the best option. Okay, two more. Chris Pine.
Yes. Oh my gosh, yes.
Okay.
100%.
He's too good. He's too good.
But he's already been in Wonder Woman. People would be outraged.
Doesn't matter. Who cares? And then
Jared Leto as the Joker as Batman. Is that the last
no,
one?
No, stop it. Get out of here. Last one. This one is going to surprise you guys, but you guys haven't done what I've told you to do a million times. Bill Hader.
Yeah. As soon as you said that, I was like, yeah, he's going Bill Hader.
If you watch Barry, Bill Hader could be Batman, guys. It could happen.
Okay, so the thing I've seen Bill Hader in most recently is that annoying Pringles commercial. So I'm dubious on this one.
I recently watched Bill Hader doing you know how SNL always does those auditions, like digital shorts where it's the lost audition tapes for like Jurassic Park or Back to the I recently watched his Jurassic Park one where he's Alan Alda. And I can't get that out of my head. So it'd be like Alan Alda playing Batman, which may work. Okay, really, really quick though. If you guys had to guess who is older at the start of, so if Oscar Isaac played Batman today and Christian Bale, when he started playing Batman and Batman Begins, who's older?
Christian Bale.
Oscar Isaac. The way that you're asking, it makes me want to say Oscar Isaac.
So Christian Bale was 31 when he started playing Batman. Oscar Isaac is 39.
Really?
Yeah. Did
I
not
he was
see
like
that
34.
Coming. I thought he was like 30, maybe.
Wow. Yeah. Good for him.
Interesting.
So, I mean, Jake, those are some great choices. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is we can't see all of those, but there's part of me that would like to see all of those different people play Batman.
Yeah. So it would be awesome.
I think we need, like, I want to get one of the comics to get weird, and I want, like, a multi, or, like, I know Spider-Man's kind of doing it, but, like, sell out for the multiverse thing, like, six Batman in the same movie, like, different shapes, sizes, like,
well, there's a
species,
way to do that.
I don't care.
I mean, you could easily go, like, John Hamm as Batman, Michael B. Jordan as Red Hood, Oscar Isaac as Nightwing, and, like, you can get all these different people to play Batman in the same movie.
And random kid from Stranger Things as Dick Grayson.
Yes. Finn Wolfhard or Dustin?
Just pick any
Dustin.
Of them.
Okay.
Yes. Dustin would be so good. But now that I think about it, I'm just like, wait, okay, I need to go watch Black Panther again so I can see Michael B. Jordan as a villain. A la,
dude, he would be such a good Red Hood.
Yeah. Yeah. He really would.
Yeah.
Dang it. Stop dreamcasting things. All right.
All right. We got to move on.
We got to
stick
on
this all night.
Okay. See you guys. Have fun.
And now for our review of Ocean's 8, the new film in the Ocean's series that kind of ties in, but is really a reboot-quel. I think that's the term I've decided on. Because it is rebooting, but at the same time ties into the original. Not the original trilogy, but the modern trilogy of Ocean's films starring, you know, Brad Pitt, Matt Damon, Clooney, all those greats, Bernie Mac, Casey Affleck, tons of people. So let's go ahead and get to our general thoughts of Ocean's 8. Trevor, what are your general thoughts?
So this is interesting. It's a fun little heist film that I was mostly entertained by. But there's just something missing in the soul of it. It has an empty soul.
I can tell you exactly what it's missing if you want to know.
It's missing Steven Soderbergh is what it's missing.
Well, that too. But with that, it is missing any form of conflict whatsoever.
Right? There's no, where is Andy Garcia?
Right. There's
no, I
wouldn't
even care if it was actually his character.
Right. Like they try and set up Richard Armitage. Yeah, Armitage. As the bad guy, when it's like he's not really against them, he's more of like an unknowing pawn.
And he's actually kind of likable.
He's kind of a tool. He's likable because he's Richard Armitage.
Sure.
But he's not. If it was anybody else, that character would be, which maybe just poor casting on Gary Ross's part or whoever did casting for this.
This is Gary Ross's best movie, probably.
You think so? Oh, I forgot that you hate biopics and
I'm not impressed by the rest of his filmography.
Well, if you go by like if you include what he's written, I like Dave quite a bit. I think Dave's pretty fun.
Okay,
film.
Yes, I forgot that he had written Dave. I like Dave a lot.
And he
Dave
wrote
is
Big.
Better than this.
So
yeah, Big is good.
I actually like The Hunger Games quite a bit. I think The Hunger Games is good. But I think Catching Fire, the second one, is probably one of the best book to screen adaptions ever done.
I agree, actually. It's very good. Mockingjay is a garbage train wreck.
Yeah, Mockingjay kind of falls apart. Once again, you don't need to make it two parts. Just make it one.
Anyway, let's talk about Ocean's 8.
Yeah, there's no conflict this whole entire movie. And not even that there's no conflict from a bad guy. Everything on their plan, or everything just kind of goes according to plan and plays out and is fine, and there's never anything in this movie that's like they have to transition or change, or like there's something that really ruins their plan.
Right. The character chemistry is missing. The character relationships are missing.
Right.
It's just these, I think the performances are good, but the characters don't do much.
Right.
It feels like, I kind of described it to somebody the other day, as it has all of the substance and none of the style of the Soderbergh Oceans movies.
I almost think I would like this more if it wasn't titled Oceans something. Like, if it was just like a female heist movie, I'd be a lot more...
Because because Ocean's 11 is a singular film. Like,
right.
It's a tongue-in-cheek heist movie that is fooling you. It knows it's fooling you. You know you're being fooled, and it all works
right.
Because Soderbergh is great.
And nobody,
mostly,
like,
that's why it works.
The script is like borderline Sorkin at points, but like Sorkin, if Soderbergh had put his jokes into it. And then like the casting and chemistry is perfect. I mean, there's so many things that go right for that movie that there's no way it should go right. I will say I had a lot of fun with this movie. It was
I did too.
Like watching it in the theater, I was like, this is a lot of fun. I outside of there being no conflict, which we'll talk about when we get into spoilers, there's one other very big thing that I have a huge problem with that's mostly ruined. I don't want to say it because I feel like that would be spoilers. There's a huge problem that I have with this movie. But I like, all that being said, I had a lot of fun watching this. It's one of those movies that, like, if I could very easily pick it apart. But at the end of the day, I enjoyed myself as I was watching this. Like, I was like, this is fun. Like, this is,
yeah.
This is a really, like, fun movie. There's, like, cool little heist moments. The cast is funny. There's a couple all-stars in the cast. I had no idea who Awkwafina was before this. I thought she did a pretty great job.
Yes.
Mindy Kaling was great, but the MVP for me is Anne Hathaway.
I completely agree. She played like a pitch perfect celebrity parody.
Yes.
And it was I think she was great. It's especially good when compared to, I think, some of her other performances when you take it in the context of the other kinds of things that she can do. But
right.
I was incredibly impressed by her.
I would very much love to watch this and Devil Wears Prada as a double feature for her roles.
Oh yeah.
I think those would, programming wise, work perfectly. I feel like we should get this out of the way and get the, like, Ocean's 11 versus Ocean's 8 comparisons out of the way now so that we can just focus on this film as a film. There are things that this film does that very much feels like it's trying to imitate Soderbergh's style. There's the long zooms from far out of like one of the opening shots, not opening, but one of like the first shots is Sandra Bull, like from way up above on top of a building, slowly zooming in on a street corner until Sandra Bullock walks by, which is a very Soderbergh thing to do. If you've ever seen the film Side Effects, it opens and closes with just like two insanely long zooms. There's like the fun kind of wipes and transitions throughout the film. And then I very much feel, at least, like they're trying to, and this is kind of obvious, you know, Sandra Bullock plays Debbie Ocean. She's very much trying to play the Clooney character. The movie opens with her getting out of jail. I don't think that's a spoiler at all to say, because it's in a trailer, which is how Danny Ocean started the movie. And then I feel like they very much try to set up Cate Blanchett as the Rusty, which is the character that Brad Pitt played. You have Sarah Paulson kind of playing the Matt Damon role. But maybe not as neurotic. She's a lot more competent. Not that Matt Damon's character wasn't competent, but she's kind of that third, almost like the junior heist man in the movie. And then after that, it kind of just goes out the window as far as like comparisons. So it was weird because, like, at first I thought we were about to get this, like, okay, where's the two twins or the two brothers that do the driving, or where's the old guy that doesn't want to get back into it, but then is drawn in by the, like, I was like, okay, right, waiting for it. And then when we kind of start to get off of that, I was like, here we go. Now let's make it your own. That's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there are a couple elements, like, we also get the montage in the similar style to Soderbergh.
Right.
We get, the way that they do the hero shots kind of near the end are very have a very Soderbergh feel to them. But yeah, I think you're right. I think that the problem is that this is a sort of sequel to something that was never really meant to have that.
Right.
And I think if you shoot this as your own heist film instead of in the style of the Ocean's films, I think it comes out better.
Right. So we're going to continue this, but we're going to continue this into spoilers because there's a couple things that people should know, but that kind of add some things to the movie that we should talk about. So if you haven't seen Ocean's 8, it's a fun movie. It's out of all the things that are in theaters right now, you know, if you don't feel like going to see Solo or Avengers again did you see the guy that saw Avengers 43 times and seems like a somewhat normal human being?
Oh my gosh,
man, jealous. It's a fun movie. It's great counter programming to everything else that's out there. There's a lot of fun to be had in this movie, and if you're just looking for a fun heist movie, this is a good movie. It's real fun. It's definitely worth your time to go check it out, especially when you look at all the other garbage that's out right now.
Yeah, it's fun.
Okay, so continuing into spoilers for Ocean's 8, where the cameos of Saul and the amazing Yen distracting to you?
So Saul was pretty distracting. That was unnecessary. The amazing Yen was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But it was like very much a cop out.
Right.
I don't know.
Both of those kind of just played off as very cheap throw-ins to me. And out of all the cameos that you could have decided to have thrown in there, one, you don't go for any of the big shots. You don't put in the Matt Damon, the Ben, or the Brad Pitt, or the George Clooney, which is fine. That's fine. But then to have an all-female heist team and not include Julia Roberts or Catherine Zeta-Jones, to me, was kind of like,
yeah,
well, that's weird. That feels off. Because that was the most glaring. Like, the whole time I'm like, look, they're making an all-female movie, and you mean to tell me that they're not going to include Julia Roberts? I was almost like waiting for Julia Roberts because she was such a huge role in Ocean's 11 and Ocean's 12. She's not in 13, but she played a big role in both of those.
The problem is that with Julia Roberts and Sandra Bullock, you almost have this Penelope Cruz, Selma Hayek thing,
which I'm here for. I'm game for.
Which probably doesn't test well. It just doesn't test well. It would be interesting.
Have they ever been in a movie together?
I don't know.
That is almost a Selma Hayek, Penelope Cruz type thing.
So, I mean, I say that kind of jokingly, but yeah, I mean, especially like the Met Gala seems like something that would fit the character of Tess and kind of what she does and what she knows. Right. And,
or even she's thievery by fitting in with Catherine Zeta-Jones's like, police character.
Right. Right. I mean, I don't know. Oh, wait, I guess this is as good a place as any. Is Danny Ocean actually dead?
I think, okay, so that was my other point, was the last connection we hadn't talked about was that Danny Ocean is dead. The movie almost opens and closes with his I don't know what it's called when the body's in like a building on like
a
wall.
Crypt?
Is that, maybe that's it. It opens and like it almost opens and then it does close with Sandra Bullock at his crypt. And that felt super cheap to me. I don't know if they can pull this off, but to me, it's like, if he doesn't appear in this movie, then he's legit dead. Unless you go Fast and the Furious 5 or Fast and the Furious 6 and go Michelle Rodriguez and bring him back, which I don't think this series can pull off that kind of a bring back the way that Fast and the Furious can.
I don't think this thing's going to make enough money to get another one.
Oh, you don't think so?
It doesn't seem like it right now. I don't know.
$70 million budget. It did $58.5 this weekend. I mean,
they've been marketing the heck out of this too.
Okay, so let's say we put $50 million into marketing. It's at 120. I think it makes 120. And I think
that
there's
enough positive to do it again.
Yeah, I think it is. Okay. Because I think that there's positivity and the cast is into it enough that you could build off of that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with it. I'd love for it to happen because I think it's fun and we could keep this thing rolling. Although there's only so many things you can steal.
Right.
But
then you run into, not to bring it up again, but the Fast and the Furious problem of how many things can you steal before you have to kind of veer off into new territory.
Right. Right. So I guess to get back, I think he probably is dead. And I think they meant to signal that as like, we're moving on.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's kind of a very symbolic death that we're moving on from the previous trilogy, but I don't think it needed it.
I would have loved, like, the greatest way they could have done something was to, like, at the end, as Sandra Bullock pours herself a martini and she's sitting there on the bench in the background, unfocused. You just see like somebody walk in and start walking up towards her. And I would have been like, that's how you should have ended the movie, because then from there you can pivot, and that could have been Brad Pitt, it could have been actual Dan the Ocean, or it could have just been like Richard Armitage getting out. Like, you could go anywhere you want with that, but that leaves us with something that's then like draws people in.
I think the way you do that is Matt Damon comes and sits down next to her and then picks up a briefcase that's sitting next to her and then walks away. Like it was actually his plan or something, or like he was involved somehow.
No, because I think that would cheapen like the whole, like, so much of this movie is like giving, I don't want to get into like the feminist side versus like all of that, but it's like the woman empowerment thing of like them doing what the guys did in the Ocean's movies.
Okay, sure.
It would feel cheap and disingenuous to then be like, oh, it was Linus's plan the whole time.
That's true. That's true. I was thinking of it from the standpoint of just like the Linus character extending his arc of from the kid that everyone makes fun of and doesn't believe in anything and then becomes the mastermind.
But you could have just as easily done that exact same thing with Tess.
That's true. That's true.
I would have done.
Actually, you're right. That would have been better. That would have been hilarious.
If Tess just walks up, grabs the briefcase, says something like, "Hey, sis," and just walks off.
Yeah, that, you're right. That would have been a great cameo.
So I just think there's mixed opportunities.
I don't need the Danny Ocean crypt camp. Like, right. I don't need that.
It's a cheap way to get us a little bit emotionally invested that ultimately is distracting.
Yeah, honestly, this movie is 110 minutes. No one does this with movies like this, but if this thing had been 95 minutes, it could have been a lot better.
Yeah, what's weird about this movie is, so getting to the end, they go to the Met Gala, they pull off this elaborate heist of the jewels around Anne Hathaway's character's neck, but then the movie seems to trail on for like another, like, I remember checking my watch and being like, there's like another 25 minutes left in this movie. Yeah. And it just kind of drags on with this James Corden.
Right. So I'm going to fix this. And you cut all of the scenes with James Corden.
Yes. Completely unnecessary.
I like James Corden, and I think he does well as this character, but it's an arc that doesn't even need to exist. I think you cut him out completely. I mean, it's kind of understood, you know, like Andy Garcia in Ocean's 11 probably had some insurance adjusters checking out to make sure all of his junk was actually stolen. Like, it's not interesting.
And so if you cut all that out, you can still get, once again, we're in spoilers, you can still do the whole reveal with Richard Armitage going to jail and how they plant that on him.
Right.
To then
right.
only and, be and, like, oh, we stole all these other jewels too.
Right, and Anne Hathaway coming into the hideout like the happiest person on earth.
Oh my gosh, okay.
That was so great.
Hold on, though. That's my biggest problem with this entire movie. You mean to tell me that it's supposed to be a surprise that Anne Hathaway is part of the team? She's in the first teaser image you release. She's in all of the posters. Then not to mention the fact that the movie's titled Ocean's 8, and in every single Ocean's movie, there's been the exact amount of people in the title on the team. In Ocean's 11 was the original team. Ocean's 12, you add Tess. Ocean's 13, you add Eddie Izzard's character. And then you can kind of piece in Matt Damon's dad helping them out too. And so it's just they cast seven people as the main team, and they're like, seven will do. And then it's like, you mean to tell me that you're not going to fill out and have Ocean's 8 when obviously you chose 8 for a reason and not 7. It's not calling it Ocean 7. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, Anne Hathaway is part of the team. Surprise! No, we saw that coming from the very, like, that's not us. Like, I almost wish they had let us in on that. That would have been so much more interesting from the beginning to be like, oh yeah, Anne Hathaway's in on the team too. We, like, that would have been conflict there for them to have been like, Anne Hathaway discovered our thing, and then show them having to be like, scrambling and having Helena Bonham Carter's character having to like fix that.
Right. And also, I don't know how we've not talked about Helena Bonham Carter. This character is very much against her type, and yes, she's really good.
That's the thing, though, is like every single one of the Ocean's 8 team is great in that role. Sandra Bullock, Cate Blanchett, Anne Hathaway, Mindy Kaling, Sarah Paulson, Awkwafina, Rihanna, Helena Bonham Carter are all fantastic in their roles.
I could make an argument that Cate Blanchett, who I would probably say is the most talented actress, was the worst in this film.
I think she does fine, but her character may be the most unneeded.
That's
as
true.
Far
her
as
character
their talents.
Is, her character is like, well, it's like, well, Debbie had to have a friend from before on the team, so.
Well, it's almost like the
one.
Rusty. Like, she literally is like Brad Pitt in like the style, in her like demeanor.
But she's not as like, is not as like bizarre and always eating, and like, yeah, like she doesn't have that pizzazz.
which is sad, because Cate Blanchett has so much pizzazz and is a fantastic actress, but she's just not given as much to do. She's lacking the Soderbergh quirkiness that would have been added to the character had Soderbergh wrote and directed this.
Instead, she comes off like a 2-bit club owner, because that's what she is, watering down her vodka.
Right. But everybody in this cast is great. Like, this is a all-star, hit it out of the park, home run cast that fires on all, like, all of them are great in their roles. And even people who it's like, I didn't know who Awkwafina was. I hadn't seen Rihanna. I don't know if she's in
Battleship.
She's in Battleship, which is the one I was remembering. But then the one that she was in last year, Valerian, is the weirdest movie I've ever seen and not good. So she did great in this too as Nine Ball. Mindy Kaling is fantastic. Like, the whole cast is just great. And I don't know how they convinced all these people to play these roles, but it's a great cast. Richard Armitage is maybe a little bit too likable.
Yeah. Well, I kind of thought until about halfway through when we find out what the real plan is, I thought he was number 8 maybe.
Okay.
And they had kind of used Anne Hathaway in the marketing because she was female and a big name. So that's where I was kind of thinking that he might be. Because I thought it would be, I mean, it's kind of interesting to have the seven women and the one guy that they have helping with something. But so that's kind of where I was going at first. And then I realized that they were just out to nail him.
There was part of me that wanted it to be Dakota Fanning, because I just thought that would have been hysterical. To throw her in there. But yeah, the movie's a lot of fun. Like, I all these complaints that I have aside, I still had a lot of fun watching this. Like, this is a movie that I will, when it comes out, I will probably rent it and watch it again, because it's a fun movie.
Yeah. I put that in my notes. I wonder how this plays on second watch. Cause I mean, I mean, it's obviously, compare it to my love for Ocean's 11, one of my favorite movies that's just imminently rewatchable.
Right. It's and almost demands to be rewatched with the twists that happen at the end.
Right. And so I wonder if me watching Ocean's 11 like 30 times has colored my actual opinion of how good of a movie it is.
Right. No, I'm with you. I love those movies. I even like 12. I think 12 is great.
Yeah, I do too. I think it works as a continuation of the story.
Right. And then 13 is a whole lot of fun with Al Pacino.
The frustrating thing about 12 is that they should have told the viewer a little bit more.
Right. Like, the biggest frustration of that is, like, the whole time they're almost joking when they already have the literal Easter egg.
Right. It's 12 is a bit much. I think 13 is, I mean, it's not quite the heist movie, but I think it's a fun little movie also.
But yeah, it's once again a continuation of the story, kind of. It's still a heist, but it's kind of like a pivot heist in like how
you can
it does
only
it.
You can only steal so many things. That's right. Why the story has to go somewhere else.
Right. And I thought that the way that the heist came together in this one, like the different pieces of how they did it, worked well. I thought everybody in their roles, like everybody was given a role to play and they did that role well, with the exception of, like, we've already talked about Cate Blanchett's character is kind of like this weird middleman type character, but everybody else is like
her having to make shawarma for those people was pretty funny.
Yeah, that was pretty great. I like that she like went with it and was like, okay, yeah, I'll make you some shawarma. But like everybody's given like a skill and a talent and then does that position like well. It's never like there's that bumbling person who is like the misfit cast who's like the whole time bumbling, and then finally gets their act together. Like, you might be able to say that Helena Bonham Carter is a little bit of that way, but she always kind of gets it together, and you see her skill in that role, and she's so just enjoyable in that role that you kind of can just like throw that kind of stuff aside. So I feel like I've said my piece. This is a harder movie to review because it's like, I don't want to pick it apart when it could be, because the movie at the end of the day is enjoyable and I did have a really fun time watching it.
Right. I think my frustration is that I think a few small things here and there could have made it a lot better.
Right.
But I think it's good. It's a good, fun little movie. I kind of mentioned this already. I loved that everyone got a hero shot. Coming down the stairs, walking out of the gala.
That part
was great.
The part that I didn't love was like the what did they do with the money?
Oh yeah, that's not interesting. I don't care what they do with the money.
Right. Like,
I don't care at all.
That part I was like, okay, let's get on. But the like
that's
hero
why
shot,
Ocean's 11. It works perfect of everyone just walking away.
Everybody at the fountain, just in amazement of what's been done.
Right.
As that beautiful Clair de Lune song plays. Mm-hmm. And then it's just kind of, all right, see you guys.
But yeah, when they all get their opportunity to have their gala dress on and walking down the stairs, knowing that they're like all wearing a part of the jewelry.
Okay.
That's great. Picking apart
this movie. You could very, very easily on security tapes and with all the photographers and with all the like media that's there have gone through images and been like, wow, these women didn't have these pieces of jewelry on when they came in.
See,
wow.
I thought that too.
And that was a part for me that it's like, okay, if you really want to pick it apart, you could throw that in there. At the end of the day, that shot and that sequence is so enjoyable that it's like, okay, I don't really care. I'm having fun. Right.
I was the same way too. I thought about it, especially with like Cate Blanchett maybe had like huge earrings, and I was like, well, that's kind of obvious.
Well, because Cate Blanchett like, also like awesome. Rode the motorcycle out and then came around like the street corner.
Right.
But like Rihanna has this like huge diamond handpiece on. There's arguments to be made for that, but at the end of the day, this movie's fun. It's enjoyable. It's one that's like pretty family friendly. Like, I can't think of anything in this movie that I was like,
yeah,
well, that's,
I think it is for the most part.
It's just a fun movie and it's, you know, entertaining from beginning to end with a fantastic cast. So, I'd recommend, but, let's get to our final thoughts and our ratings. So Trevor, hit me with the final thoughts and the rating.
Yeah, ultimately a fun film, a little bit lacking some cool stuff, some not interesting stuff. Could have been a little shorter, but ultimately a good watch. Like you said, entertaining beginning to end. I give this an Ocean's 5 out of Ocean's 8.
Okay. There we go. This movie's a B for me. Like I said, we've talked about there are parts that you could pick apart and there are parts that don't work, but ultimately it's a lot of fun. The cast fires on all cylinders. They're all great in their roles. They're all given something to do and they all do it well. And I had a blast watching this movie from beginning to end. I never, other than like the third act post gala, I never found myself like bored being like, all right, get on with it. I'm curious if you do what you said, Trevor, and cut out part of that third act, the James Corden part, how much better it would work.
Yeah, I think it's a tight, succinct little story without that.
Yeah, so. All right, so that's all that we have for our review of Ocean's 8. Now let's get to our content of the week. Trevor, what is your content of the week?
Okay, I've got two things. One is a music album. One of my favorite bands, Churches, a Scottish synth pop band.
Yeah.
That's Churches with a V instead of a U if you're looking for them. They put out a new album called Love is Dead a couple weeks ago, and it is just a synth pop delight. As are their first two albums. They have just these pleasant melodies. It's easy to listen to. It's upbeat. It's a lot of fun. And then my other is something that we've kind of referenced before, but I watched the best reviewed film in the history of Rotten Tomatoes, Paddington 2, which has 196 reviews or something, and none of them are negative. And wow. Let me tell you, they're all correct.
Wow.
This movie is just a sheer delight. Paddington is full of life and grace and kindness, and he just brings that joy to everyone on screen. He brings tears to you. I literally cried in this movie. It's the first time I've cried at a movie in a long time. I highly recommend Paddington and Paddington 2. They're just delightful.
Wow.
Great.
Okay. There we go. Jake, what is your content of the week?
I'm going to re-recommend something that one of you guys recommended recently. The last season of New Girl is on Hulu now. And we've been finishing up the series recently. And it's just such a good show. I think it's maybe one of the best like ensemble sitcoms that we've had in a really long time. And every character is just so well fleshed out, so funny in their own way. And it's just a really, really fun show. And yeah, I'm sad to see it end, but I'm excited to see the finale. So check out New Girl if you haven't. It's, I think, one of the best shows that Fox didn't cancel in the middle of its amazing run. So yeah, way to go, Fox. I'm not screwing that one up.
It's a rare show that's completely carried by its performances.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's very interesting to watch.
Yeah, and that's a perfect transition into one of my recommends, which is Game Night, starring Winnie the Bish, Lamorne Morris, also starring Jason Bateman, Rachel McAdams, Kyle Chandler, and a bunch of other people. And it is so funny. It is such a like well-done movie. They do some really fun like camera work in it too, with some what's it called? What's the camera lens that you can tilt?
Tilt shift.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. There you go. What's the camera lens you can tilt? Tilt shift. They do some tilt shift stuff that's pretty cool, and it's just a really kind of fun, funny comedy that I enjoyed quite a bit. My wife and I watched it this weekend, and yeah, it's a fun one. And then my other one is there's a series that Amazon's been putting out for a while now called All or Nothing. They did three seasons on NFL teams. They did a season on a college football team, and it's pretty much like a behind-the-scenes look through an entire season of a team. And they just put out an All or Nothing on the New Zealand All Blacks, which is the famous rugby team from New Zealand that's the greatest rugby team ever. And it's fascinating to watch because they can just get in-depth on these players' lives and off the field, on the field, and just to watch some of the highlights from the games is just incredible. It actually got me really interested in rugby, so yeah, All or Nothing, the New Zealand All Blacks season.
Rugby is one of those sports that like just reminds me that Americans, we think we're the toughest and best at everything, but yeah, we don't play rugby, and we need to stop talking shit to everybody else.
Yeah, when you see guys smiling with blood coming from multiple places on their face, you're like, yeah, we're not tough.
I can't do it. No way.
Also, when they start talking about a guy being a really small rugby player and he's like 6'1", 220. I'm like, okay, I'm a tiny human being.
I might literally die.
Yeah.
In a rugby match.
So yeah, just really quickly, because this is really exciting to me. Did you guys ever watch Gargoyles as a kid?
Yes. Love it.
Did you guys hear the news about it?
Yeah.
Jordan Peele.
Yeah.
Jordan Peele wants to direct a Gargoyles movie, which is the greatest choice for somebody to direct that. So
hopefully we see that happen. But
that's all we have for this week's episode. We'll be back next week with a review of The Incredibles 2, the sequel that is about 15 years too late. Yeah, I'm a little bit bitter, but excited. If you enjoy listening to us, go to iTunes, subscribe, rate, review us, share us with your friends and family, let people know about us. That is the best way to show us your appreciation, or just let us know that you like us. If you want to know more about us or interact with us, you can go to our website at Popcorn Optional. You can find us on Twitter at Popcorn Optional. You can like us on Facebook at, I think it's Popcorn Optional as well, because Popcorn Optional is everything. My name is Cameron Salina. You can find me online at 321 Cami Time. Jake, where can we find you online?
JakeBrown.tv. Trevor?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at TurboTrevor.
Until next time, we hope you guys have a great week. Watch some movies in the words of the great Michael Scott. We'll be back ASAP as possible.
Bye.
Later. Bye.